taken a very different stance from others in the market, in the sense that we believe that market pricing should be arbitraging good from bad SLBs.
Innovations in Sustainable Finance, a University of St. Gallen podcast by Julian Kölbel.
Hello, and welcome back to the podcast Innovations in Sustainable Finance. I'm very pleased to have with me today Stephanie Mielnik from the Anthropocene Fixed Income Institute. Stephanie, it's great to have you here.
I'm pretty excited as well to be here.
Super. Yeah, Stephanie has been working in fixed income for a long time, and is really one of her specialties are sustainability-linked bonds, or SLBs, as we will call them. And they are perhaps one of the most exciting and at least most successful innovations in green capital markets of the recent years. So it has started, what would you say, about 3 years ago that we've seen the first SLB?
Yeah, so the first SLB was set up by Enel in 2019. Since then, they've been leading the market and others have followed. I think now we are at around 280 billion USD worth of sustainability linked bonds. So it has been a fantastic growth over the past 2 to 3 years.
Yes. So even though this is still a smallish fraction of the overall market, given where it has come within just 3 years, is certainly a sign of more things to come, I think. Before we get into the weeds of it, the Anthropocene Fixed Income Institute, tell us a little bit, what is that and how did you end up there?
Yeah, sure. So to give you a quick overview of how I ended up at the Anthropocene Fixed Income Institute, or let's call it by the short version, AFII. So I was working in the financial industry for more than 10 years, holding front office positions. I was a quantitative analyst, a structurer within investment banks, and more recently I was doing a product strategy for a global asset manager. And one of my best friends, who is an ESG analyst, she introduced me to the concept of sustainable finance. And that was a eureka moment for me. I came to realize that finance could achieve more than making rich people richer. And as I am passionate about mountain sports and I have seen with my own eyes the effects of global warming on our environment, that really talked to me. I will say it a bit naively, but I was very attracted by the fact that finance could make this planet a better place. So started my journey to ESG and met up with Ulf, the CEO of AFII, and the rest is history.
And the rest is history, meaning the rest after that time, you've been working at AFII and doing lots of interesting things.
Exactly. So at the AFII, what we do, so we are an NGO that aims to empower global fixed income markets in the climate transition. And our mission is really to provide fixed income investors with insights and tools to align their portfolios with ambitious climate targets. So we do a lot of research, especially market-based research, and we are monitoring, influencing, and advocating for fixed income market to price in the risk of high carbon investments.
You described your passion for using finance to make the world a better place, and AFII is focusing on fixed income markets. Is that the deliberate choice to focus on that part of the market?
Yeah, because fixed income markets are a gigantic market and have the power to really move the sustainability agenda forward, especially considering the size of the market and the fact that issuers often come back to the market for raising money through the fixed income markets. So yes, I think we have, when you are working in fixed income markets, you have a power that is very huge. Hence why it's a choice to focus on.
Right, the power of the market, the power of the fixed income market. So SLBs, maybe you can just walk us through what is an SLB?
Sure. So an SLB or sustainability linked bond is a bond that has its interest rate tied to one or several sustainability targets. For example, a company is issuing a bond with a 3% interest rate, but this will rise to 3.5% if the company does not manage to achieve one or several sustainability targets, for example, reducing carbon emissions.
So the interest that the company needs to pay, it changes depending on whether or not they reach a target that they have previously promised to reach.
Yes, exactly. So the target is called a SPT, Sustainability Performance Target, that is based on a KPI that is being defined in something called the Sustainability Linked Framework. And this framework is being validated by a second-party opinion provider. So this is a very structured market, actually.
And it has sort of found its form and how things are being done in this very short time even.
Yeah, also more needs to be done to achieve ambition in this market.
I see. Is this concept of a credit instrument that changes the interest rate depending on another variable, is that actually something new that has been just invented for the green finance market, or has that been around before?
No, it has been around before. So first of all, having an interest rate tied to sustainability target is not something that is being applied only in the SMB market. There has been emergence of sustainability-linked loans, for example, sustainability-linked Schuldschein. Now we see sustainability-linked swaps and other derivatives. Actually, when I first looked at SLB, it reminded me of structured products, which is something I have done for most of my career. And a structured product actually is a bond that has an interest rate that depends on stock or an index performance. So generally, we'll have a coupon that will rise as the market, an index like S&P or SX5E is rising. So this concept of having variable interest rate depending on an external variable is actually no new to the market.
Yes, when I hear structured products, I sort of immediately think, so, oh, you have to be careful. Structured products are difficult to understand sometimes. So we'll see whether SLBs are also difficult to understand and what are the things that we have to watch out for. But I think one important difference here is that the KPI or the SPT, right, the Sustainability Performance Target, in this case, is under control of the issuer. So it's nothing external, but it's the issuer itself that is more or less in control of whether the target will be reached. I think that is an important difference, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. That's asymmetry of information, as we may call it, where the issuer may take advantage of the fact that they know their strategy and they know how likely they are to achieve the targets, whereas the investors can only guess by the public information they can have access to.
Right, yes. The company probably knows whether they will reach the target. So from an investor's vantage point, if we look at such a structure, I suppose we can sort of split it into two things. It's a regular bond plus something else. So what would you advise? How should we look at that in terms of investing in such a bond?
So there are several things. So first of all, I should mention that it's a market that has been heavily criticized for its lack of ambition, with targets that are that are too easily achievable for the issuers, step-ups that are too low, and KPIs that don't necessarily that are not necessarily material for the issuer. So these are points of attention for investors. But I should say that, first of all, what we have also observed is that generally the SLBs that are not well structured come from the fact that the sustainability strategy of the company itself is not necessarily well defined. So maybe the first thing to look at is whether we believe in the company's sustainability strategy or not. Then the second thing, as I mentioned, is that an SLB comes with a sustainability linked framework where a second party opinion is highlighting what are the point of attention that the company may have, whether the KPIs are material, and also whether the KPIs and the targets are aligned with global frameworks like SBTI or Paris Agreement.
That would be the Science-Based Targets Initiative, right? SBTI.
Yes.
But just a quick question. You said second-party opinion. Who is providing this? Who is the second party?
So they are independent controllers. Well, independent, I will come back on that, but they it can be companies like Morningstar or Sustainalytics or S&P as well has been setting up SPO services. ISS as well are amongst the biggest providers.
So should I think about this similar to a credit rater that, you know, gives some sort of analysis and opinion on the SLB framework?
Yes, exactly. Except they are not totally independent because they are being paid by the issuer. So obviously they have an incentive to provide a good second party opinion because, well, otherwise they lose. They are at risk of losing clients. And on that point, it is pretty well known in the industry that bankers know which SPO providers are the ones that are going to give the best opinion for which clients. So there is a SPO provider arbitrage that is taking place. And sometimes we have seen SPOs being issued on the SLB that really were not ambitious by any market standards. So yeah, there is a bit of a conflict of interest here.
So wouldn't you at AFII then come in to sort of point out that it's a problematic issue?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have taken a very different stance from others in the market in the sense that we believe that market pricing should be arbitraging good from bad SLBs. And actually, the ambition of SLBs should be reflected in market prices. So the idea is to price the coupon step-ups depending on the ambition of the target. When you think about it, it actually makes sense because if you are an issuer that has a target of reducing emissions by 10% versus an issuer that has ambition to reduce that has the target of reducing emission by 50%, well, the latter should have a better pricing than the first one, all else equal.
A better pricing because with the 50% reduction, I would expect that the probability of pulling that off is lower. And in return, the probability that I get a step up as the investor is higher. That is what
yes.
You mean for pricing higher, yes?
Yes, exactly. Because if you have the more ambitious the target, the lower is the probability to achieve the target, obviously.
Right.
So the more likely the issuer is going to be to have to pay the coupon step up. And that will have an effect on the SLB premium. And that actually should motivate issuers to set up ambitious SLBs, because if you issue an SLB that is really good and that has a really good target and you get better financial conditions, well, you are incentivized to do well. Whereas if you get the same market price, however you set up your SLB, then you are not really incentivized to do well. You can have a target that is really meaningful and that you are sure to achieve, and you will get the same price from the market.
Right. So you're saying if the market really pays attention about ambitiousness and makes up its mind about the probability of achieving this, then companies that feel comfortable having an ambitious target, they should actually do so and put this in the bond because they will get rewarded for that.
Yes, exactly. That's what we should see. That's not necessarily what we have seen because it's a market that is still in its infancy and well, it's still up to, I think we can expect from the market more frameworks and more structure and more standards. So that's something we don't have now. So far, this is not how the market has been looking at SLBs, but I hope that in the future we can see this kind of thinking being adopted.
Yes, I also wonder, what do investors really hope to see? Right. Of course, collecting that step up is cash. It's nice, of course, but that also means that the company failed to reach the target. So I think part of the attraction to SLBs is also that investors want to see firms reach the target because that would look well in their portfolio and it might align with their own targets that they have.
Yeah, so I think there are many motivations when it comes to investors, and there are many answers to that question. I think on one hand, there are investors that do not care whether it's an SLB or not, and would have bought the bonds anyway because they believe in the issuer, they believe in the issuer sustainability strategy, and it's more a question of looking at the issuer itself rather than the SLB, and this is just a bonus feature for them. Then, on the other hand, you have investors that have mandates with sustainability targets, and so they have pressure to buy SLBs to fulfill the sustainability profile of their mandate. And in that case, they don't really have a choice sometimes, especially if you look at the high yield space or the EM space, for example, where opportunities to buy green bonds or other sustainable debt is really limited. So even if an SLB is not really good per se, well, it's still better than nothing, and it's still a way to extend your sustainable bonds universe.
Right. And these guys, they should pay attention that they don't buy bonds that are essentially, you know, a greenwash structure to hide a lack of ambition, right? Because they have this mandate, so we would hope that they pay attention to ambitiousness.
Yeah, but sometimes, yeah, they don't always, as I mentioned, they don't always have a choice, and they might be pushed by the end investor and by management to show good statistics and good sustainability profile, and that it may not be that the targets of the SLBs are really good, but if you go to your management saying, oh, well, I have achieved to have 50% of my portfolio invested in SLB versus 10% last year, look, my sustainability profile is much higher, then it looks better.
Right. I think this is the perennial challenge of sustainable finance, to transform this ambition to do the right thing into numbers, structures, actions, and outcomes. This is the, the circle we're trying to square.
Yeah, this is not a very easy problem to solve. I think one of the issues with SLB is that they are frameworks like ICMA. For example, they have issued the S&P principles. They have issued a list of recommended KPIs. The World Bank has done the same for sovereign SLBs. But there are no set rules to say that an SLB is good or not. There is no such thing that exists at the moment. So this is why it has been hard for investors to navigate in the world of SLBs.
Right.
Now we still see positive things with SLB, and that's a project that we think is key for driving transition in fixed income markets, and I can expand a little bit on that.
Sure. Yeah, I would love to hear it. So maybe to start, maybe not everyone's clear on what is the difference between an SLB and a green bond, because green bonds are also an important asset class.
Yeah, exactly. And they're a much older asset class. So somehow they paved the way for sustainability-linked bonds to grow. And so the main difference between green bonds and SLB is that with an SLB, the issuers don't have restrictions on the use of proceeds. An SLB money can be used for anything the issuer wants, basically. Whereas for a green bond, the issuer has to use the bond's money specifically for green projects. For example, solar panels or green buildings or any other renewable energy project. And the money cannot be used for any other corporate purposes.
Right. So you are constrained in how you use the proceeds of the bonds. And you obviously have to either have green assets already or at least have a concrete plan how to establish them.
Exactly. And that is a very structured market as well, with that relies on green bond principles, that relies also on third-party verifiers and on other organizations such as climate bond initiatives that have also been reviewing and will have a hand in this market to make sure that it is not up for greenwashing.
Right. One of the concerns that people have had with SLBs is that it allows a company that is sort of, let me say, at the very beginning of its transition or ESG journey, so basically a terrible company in many respects, but they say, oh, well, in 10 years, we will be good in X, fill in the SPT. And then all of a sudden you have generated a green security from a brown issuer, basically. So that is, I think, one angle of criticism that SLBs have faced.
Yeah, and actually I believe the same criticism can apply for green bonds. Because when you think about it, like an issuer that has a high exposure to carbon intensive activities could issue green bonds without having to necessarily reduce its exposure to high carbon activities. Let's say I'm a utilities company that has 90% of my assets in the coal power plants. I could still raise a green bond to build renewable projects without necessarily having to shut down my coal power plants.
Now, right.
An SLB is addressing the whole corporate structure. It's not restricted to only one part of the company's activities, but according to the SLB principle, the KPIs that are being chosen by the issuer should cover the whole corporate structure. So if you take the same utility company that sets up an SLB with a target of reducing its carbon emission, then they wouldn't have a choice than shutting down some of their coal power plants if they want to effectively reduce their emissions.
So you would say an SLB, if it does cover the whole corporate structure, because it is forward-looking and sort of promises an improvement, you know, if things go well, this is an issue that has some impact, can we say?
Yeah, exactly. It has the potential to have some impact. I mean, with the caveat that obviously the targets are ambitious and the KPI is well defined. And one thing to mention here is that the SLB principles require also that the KPIs are being externally audited. So it's not just a number that is entirely made up by the company. I mean, even if there are loopholes, and we can discuss about that further, but it's supposed to be a KPI that is reflecting the company's activities and that is being externally verified.
Let's perhaps move to an example. you said you would bring an example, and that might help us to dig into some of these issues a bit more granular. So what would you propose? Which SLB should we talk about?
Mm-hmm. So maybe we can discuss about Air France Skylab SLB, as it has been issued pretty recently, and is touching upon a sector that is very much looked at for its high carbon emissions.
Fantastic. Air France KLM. So that's an airline.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell us, when did they issue? What are the key features of the SLB?
So the SLB was issued in January this year. It was issued in two tranches, one maturing in 2026 and the other maturing in 2028. So the SLB is linked to one target, which is a reduction of carbon emissions intensity. And here I want to highlight there is a huge difference between having a target set up against emissions intensity versus targets set up as versus a KPI that is targeting absolute carbon emission. We see more positively absolute carbon emission versus intensity. But well, they still have targets that have been SBTi verified and that are in line with global standards.
So what is the target exactly then? The timing and the... What is the target?
So the target is to reduce emissions by 10% in 2025. And if the company fails to achieve this target, they will pay on the two subsequent years a step-up coupon of 25 bips.
25 bips. And what's the coupon at the start?
So the coupon is 8.5%, aligned with in initial guidance, which is a pretty high coupon, indeed, especially compared to the level of the step-up.
Right. Yes, the step-up. And also, what is the volume of the bond? Because that will give us an idea what, you know, how big is the penalty in dollar terms.
Yeah. To mention, so Air France, also the coupon is very high. And while it's obviously sub-investment grade, it's an issue that is quasi investment grade due to the fact that most of its debt is being sort of guaranteed by the French government. So yeah, it's an interesting study case to that extent. So they have been, the SLB has been structured in two tranches, totaling a bit over 1 billion. So yeah, I don't have the book number, but I think it was pretty well oversubscribed.
Okay, so lots of market interest there.
Yeah, well...
And what impresses me is the target is very soon. I've seen SLBs where the target is very far away, but 10% in 2 years, that is, it's not very far away.
Yeah, but actually the SLB, well... The maturity is pretty short. It's a 5 years bond, so it's not very surprising. We have seen that happening with a couple of short dated SLBs in the market, so that's not really surprising. What should be mentioned here is actually the baseline, which is not the latest number that has been released by Air France when it comes to emissions. Mm-hmm. But it's actually a baseline in 2019. And one can wonder why they have not chosen a baseline in 2021, for example, which was the latest figure released. And that's something that we have observed consistently in the SLB market, is that issuers tend to choose targets that are, pretty backdated. And sometimes they have already achieved a substantial reduction in emissions. And so the target is not that meaningful anymore. This is not really the case for Air France. Between 2019 and 2021, they have not drastically reduced their emissions. So this is still valid to some extent. But yeah, that's a point of attention for other SMBs in the market.
Yes, I think that point you just made that sometimes the target is already halfway achieved, or I think there has been one case where the target was basically achieved. I think in the case of, I think it was Tesco's. According to what you said earlier, if investors think, okay, what is the probability that I will get the step up and price that in? Then, I mean, if they realize that the target has already been reached, then the pricing should just be in line with a normal bond.
Exactly. And so, I mean, I'm diverging a bit from the Air France example, but Uruguay, for example, has been issuing an SLB last year with a target of reducing their emissions by around 50%, but with a baseline of 1990. And they have already reduced their emissions by 47% since then. Surprisingly, the SLB has been very well received. But yeah, investors shouldn't price any improvement in their emissions, considering the achievement they've already shown when it comes to their emissions.
Yes. No, I think that is probably something that if ICMA updates its guidance on sort of what, you know, I think this is important to protect the market to avoid things like that.
Exactly.
Right. Coming back to Air France, I think I read in a second party opinion that the reason to pick 2019 as the baseline is just because passenger numbers have been taken a huge dent, of course, during the pandemic. And that if you look at relative emissions, so emissions relative to passenger numbers, then, you know, it might be more useful to pick a baseline in normal times, given that we expect normal times. That's the reasoning I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think it would be more valid if they were using absolute emissions. But here they're using intensity emissions. So
yes.
While if the number of passengers drops, fuel being used is still being, I mean, the fuel being used by passenger, it's being constant because, yeah, well, the number of passengers drops, but the fuel usage also drops drastically. So,
well, I think there are two ways to argue here. Of course, I see the point for absolute emissions because at the end of the day, the atmosphere cares about absolute emissions and nothing else. It's parts per million that we measure at the end of the day. On the other hand, it's important that the target is under the control of the company. And I think something like COVID-19, where passenger numbers went down and probably absolute emissions went down as well, that is not under control of the company. And I think that from the perspective of the issuer, I would be careful to issue targets that I don't fully control, don't you think?
Yeah, no, you are right, I think. Let's see how they move their targets in the future. I guess that they will update at some point. So, yeah, I mean, let's see what the future holds when it comes to setting targets in the time of COVID.
Yes. And there's a competition issue as well, of course. I mean, driving down absolute emissions, you can do that very easily by carrying fewer passengers. It's not really consistent with the way an airline is run.
Yeah.
It would actually, this is maybe a completely crazy idea, but maybe you could have sector-wide SLBs where basically several airlines, maybe serving the same markets, issue together, which, you know, they have a target, all of them together. I wonder what incentives that would set.
Well, collaborative SLBs, I mean, that's a game theory exercise here, and that would be I would love to see that.
Yeah, well, so this is maybe something to figure out in the next research paper or so. We'll think about it, but let's go a little bit back to Air France.
Yeah,
I mean, the aviation sector is important, of course, because I think it generates 2.5% of global greenhouse gas emissions, something on the order of that, so it is substantial. And what is perhaps more concerning is that it is set to grow further. Passenger numbers go up every year, and there are very little solutions on the horizon in terms of technological improvements. Right, so flying is an energy-intensive thing, And it's going to be very hard to take the carbon out of flying, even though there are ideas, of course, but I think they are still very far away. So it is, I think, counter to the hard to abate sectors. Isn't that the term that's used?
Yeah, also, I mean, what we hear from aviation specialists is that it's a market that has potential to decrease its emission with simple solutions, actually. If you think about the routes that are being taken by planes, there are huge work streams going on in the industry to optimize the routes. There are some smart solutions that are being invented, such as carrying the plane on the driveway, which is consuming a lot of fuels. How to reduce the weight of planes as well, as weight is having a huge impact on the fuel consumption. If I can give you a funny example, American Airlines deleted the magazines from their planes, so there are no magazines on American Airlines planes anymore. And it's, I don't have the number in mind, but it helped them saving a huge amount of fuel over the past years. So yeah, there are solutions that are being explored. Biofuels is on the table, but I think the industry is not there yet. But yeah, between route optimization and a lot of smart, easy and smart fix, there's a lot that can already be achieved.
Yeah, the magazine example is funny. So is that simply for the weight of the magazines? Is that the
exactly.
reason? Not the printing. Okay, the weight of the magazines. Wow.
Yeah, the weight of the magazine. Yeah.
Yeah.
And EasyJet
it
has
sounds
started.
Like, you know, if everybody just brought a little bit less weight on board, maybe going to the bathroom before, that might be another option.
Well, that was actually another suggestion for reducing
really?
fuel. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? Yeah, I think... there's always these two positions, right? You could say, well, this is super important that innovation continues in the airline sector. There are approaches, there are solutions. It's important, you know, to keep the pressure on and do whatever is feasible just to increase efficiency in this market. And then there are, of course, people who say, well, look, you know, if we want to reach the Paris goal, then we just have to fly less. But I think, you know, I think it's important to play on both fields. And I think SLBs clearly have a role to play in the former, right? Whereas the latter is probably more of a regulatory exercise because, you know, there's just no way in which airlines can agree to do less of what they do. This is not how, you know, how profit-oriented businesses can be run. At least I cannot imagine it. But in that, you know, in that limited role of, you know, improving efficiency, you know, within the rules of the game, do you think this SLB is a good example?
Yeah, I think it. At the end of the day, it still aims to achieve. I mean, even if 10% of intensity reduction might not seem like substantial, it's still aligned with global frameworks and aligned with like having the industry. On track with its carbon emission. You mentioned that the airline industry is playing an important role in global emissions. Well, the International Energy Agency has actually categorized the sector as not being on track to meet Paris agreements. So yes, reducing emissions in this sector is key. And we have seen positively, the fact that an issuer such as Air France came to the market with an SLB that was aligned with global frameworks.
So I have two questions. The first one about this target, 10% in 2 years, I think that sounds, you know, without knowing a lot, but that sounds actually kind of substantial. What I wonder is what happens in the 2 years after? So, because I think there are certainly always low-hanging fruits, but after you've, you know, reduced 10%, will it be possible to reduce another 10% in the 2 years after? So does Air France give any sort of guidance on what happens beyond these 10%?
Yes, yeah, so they have a target of reducing their emissions by 30% in 2030.
Oh, I see. So okay, so they're committed to keep going.
Yes, and, they are.
Yeah.
And so if they issue other SLBs with longer maturities, we can expect that this will be aligned as well with their long-term commitments.
Right. So, and I think then there are two ways broadly to look at whether this is ambitious. One is sort of to compare cross-sectionally to what do others do, what are accepted practices in the industry, right? What are targets that are verified by the Sustainable Science-Based Targets Initiative? And the other way is more to look at them in absolute terms, whether, you know, the emissions implied by this relative target, given expectations about passenger numbers, whether that will stack up with emission paths that are in line with Paris or not.
Yeah. And actually, to come back to the pricing discussion,
yes, so that would have been my second question. Please go ahead.
Right. So if we look at Air France SLB, we evaluated the premium associated with the step-ups at around 7.5 pips, which is actually pretty decent, considering that a lot of SLBs we are pricing have premiums around 2 or 3 bips. So actually 7.5 bips means that the target is actually okay, ambitious. And that's because we have evaluated the probability for Air France to meet their target at around 50%.
Okay, so from the 7.5 bips, you conclude that the market expectation for reaching the target is 50%.
Yes. It's the theoretical price of the SLB. So that's where the market should price the SLB is at a premium of 7.5 bips per annum.
Oh, where the market should price it. And do you have a sense of where the market did price it?
Yeah, so actually, we did our own analysis and I should add a disclaimer that evaluating premiums, as you well know, Julian, is not an easy exercise. So that's on the evaluation that the premium priced by the market is around 8 bips. So actually, it's not too far from the theoretical premium, which was surprising because usually we see that SLBs are being priced as a much higher premium compared to their theoretical premium. So actually, yes, for Air France, it seems to be pretty much in line.
Great. Yes. Yes, of course. And I know it's always hard to know, right, what would have been the price if it weren't an SLB. That is the hard part to figure out empirically what the market ended up paying. Maybe they've read your research and acted accordingly.
Finally.
Yeah.
Well, this is not what we observe. For other SLBs. So, maybe this is just the start. Maybe this is luck. I don't know. But hopefully, this is the market listening to us.
Yeah. But maybe to recap. So it's important when evaluating an SLB is to sort of look at the KPI. And ask yourself, so is that something they've already achieved, or is that, you know, still something they need to work at? Where do they stand? And sort of make up your mind, is that a sensible target for the company? And second, you should look at the size of the step up, right? Sort of when is the observation date? How big is the step up and over what time? And I think that's what some people don't pay attention to, right? If you just pay the step up over 3 months, then it's actually really not that much. So it's really, really important to look at the step up date vis-a-vis the maturity date to actually calculate the size of the step up that you might capture as an investor.
And that's why the pricing approach, I think, is so interesting because it encompasses all of these notions. And it's like a holistic approach. It's not looking at each and every parameter one by one, where like setting, defined goals and targets of what's ambitious is a really hard exercise.
I remember, and I bring this up just because I think it's really important to understand, you were saying at an earlier conversation that it's really good if there's just one target, because if there are several targets, it becomes really complicated.
Exactly. So that's something we've been advocating for, that less is more, and that simplicity is key in this market. And that's also because, A, we have seen that some issuers have been coming to the market with a couple of targets that were not easily priceable and that were kind of, yeah, discutable and that had not a huge financial value. And it's much easier to price an SLB if there is only one target. Because if you want to evaluate the probability for the issuer to meet its sustainability target, it's very difficult to do it with one KPIs and one target. But if you start having several, and if they are linked to one another, that's becoming an impossible exercise. And then investors have no visibility on whether they have a chance of getting the coupon step up or not.
Another interesting challenge I've heard is that there's a very famous paper that's called A Fine is a Price. And it means when there's something that you're not supposed to do, and in that case, it would be, you know, failing your target. And companies have announced targets for a while, of course, right? So it is frowned upon if you don't meet your target. Now, if with an SLB, effectively what you do is you put a fine on failing the target. So you'll have to pay, right? But what it will potentially reduce is the reputational cost of failing a target. Because without the SLB structure, it just is basically embarrassing not to meet your target. And, you know, the media will come and will say, you know, you lied to us, something like that. And that is costly in and of itself. Now, if you have an SLB, you might say, well, you know, we made a deal. We said if we don't make it, we'll pay X amount. And look, we're paying. So what do you want? What's your impression here? And I think there have been only very few cases where an SLB target has failed so far. Is it like that? Is it just the fine and you're okay? Or is it actually that you have to pay the fine and you have the reputational damage on top? What's your impression?
Well, again, I think that this is very much linked to a company ambition in its sustainability strategy. So there is one recent example of SLB that has failed to meet its target, and it's a public power corporation. So it's a Greek PPC, a Greek utility company that actually had a really ambitious target of reducing its absolute emissions by 40% over 3 or 4 years. I don't remember the number of years, but anyway, they failed to meet that target due to the energy crisis and the situation in Ukraine, because they have not been able to shut down their coal power plants as quickly as that was originally planned.
Okay.
And there has not been too much criticism around that, because they had a really ambitious sustainability plan, and they were really trying to achieve it. And unfortunately, that was out of their resort, that there was this energy situation in Ukraine, and that the government requirement that led them to not shut down their coal power plant as planned. So they unfortunately missed their target, and now they have to pay a 50 bips coupon step up. The thing is, on another hand, so when you are an investor, you have a fiduciary duty. And part of this fiduciary duty now is to make sure that you having your sustainability risk appropriately priced. And to that extent, the SLBs can be a hedge against future changes in a company or a country strategy. If you take, for example, the case of Enel, and they have a substantial amount of long-dated sustainability linked bonds. If you have a change of leadership at Enel, and the new executives are not on board with sustainability and do not want to continue their sustainable journey, They might think twice about it because not meeting that target might come at a huge interest rate cost. So if they have to pay all of their step-ups, well, that might cost them more than actually achieving the target. So from an investor's perspective, that's a hedge. I think that's one of the interesting outcomes of SMPs.
Yes. Yeah, as an investor, you can either get the sustainability improvement that you wanted, or you get money. And if you're sort of indifferent between the two, I think you really have set yourself up in a safe way. You've reduced your risks there.
Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, if you believe that the companies or the countries emitting the SLB are going to meet their targets for sure, then it's as if you were holding a standard bond.
Yes.
And that should be priced accordingly.
Yeah. No, I agree. It is very exciting. If the market sort of prices this rationally, then we can actually learn a lot from prices about the probability of reaching this or that target. I think that is at the moment, we have all these targets in the Science-Based Targets Initiative for 2030, 2050, and so forth. And it is difficult to judge what we should make of these targets. So I think an SLB is one step further, you know, putting some money on the line saying, okay, this is a target that we're really serious about. We're going to pay something if we don't make it. So I think it is a signal that strengthens my belief in a target that a company has. I think another issue is also that it allows companies to focus on what is the key thing they're trying to achieve with an ESG, which can be very helpful, I think, for some companies.
Yeah, and when you think about it, before the SLB market, you had these targets that were part of a 300 pages sustainability report. Whether portfolio managers were reading them entirely, I bet most did not. And here with the SLB market, you have targets that are out in the open, and that all of a sudden investors should start really looking at them and caring about them, because otherwise there are financial implications. So that's, I think, one of the positive aspects of SLBs as well, is that it's starting making much more public these companies' targets.
Yes. Right. So we're actually approaching the full hour. So we should wrap it up. But Stephanie, if you look ahead and you have three wishes, three sort of what would you wish in the SLB market to happen?
Well, I think simplicity is one that we mentioned. So I hope to see that in the future. Also, lately, it's something that we have seen emerging, like structures tend to be bit more simple. So yeah, again, I hope that market starts listening to us. Second is to see SLB pricing becoming a standard, and that investment bank investors and issuers account for the pricing of step-up coupons. And lastly, I hope to see an increasing number of KPIs linked to nature. Nature and biodiversity loss has been a growing concern for the industry. And I think that with SLB, there is a scope for more nature-related KPIs. Hopefully TNFD should help setting targets and metrics. And yeah, we can see more of this.
Super. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your insights with us, Stephanie. I wish you all the best. And I think you'll go skiing soon, right?
Yes, exactly. Very much looking forward to it.
Okay. So enjoy the snow while it lasts, and thanks for everything.
Thank you very much, Julian.
Innovations in Sustainable Finance. A University of St. Gallen podcast by Julian Kölbel.